Herzlich willkommen zu Saatkorn, deinem Podcast mit Inspiration für eine bessere Arbeitswelt. Hallihallo und herzlich willkommen zum Saatkorn Podcast. Heute ein total wichtiges Thema, was ich hier im Podcast eigentlich noch nie hatte. Es geht um Diversity, Equity and Inclusion. Also Einzelthemen hatte ich schon, aber nicht in der Summe. Und ich habe heute jemanden am Start, eine Person, die ich diese Woche live erleben durfte. Ich war total beeindruckt. Sie ist nicht deutschsprachig, deswegen switchen wir gleich auf Englisch. Und ich freue mich total, heute Sarah Cordivano hier im Podcast begrüßen zu dürfen. So I switch to English now. Hi Sarah, you are working at Zalando. You are head of DEI strategy and governance for talent and leadership. Welcome on the Saatkorn podcast.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to be here.
I was so super impressed by your speech you held this week in Berlin that I immediately after the speech ran to you and said, hey, please, can you take some time for the podcast? So I'm super happy that this works out. So perhaps you can give our listeners some background to you. I said already you're working at Zalando. And where does this passion for DEI topics come from? And what was your way to Zalando?
Yeah, so great question, and thanks again for having me. So my name is Sarah. I am originally from Philadelphia, and I've been living in Berlin for a few years now, working at various companies. And my background is data analytics, so really figuring out how we can gather insights from data. And several years ago, I transitioned into working in DEI full-time. And I bring a lot of that experience around data analytics and project management with me. And yeah, it's been a great journey. And I also recently published a book called Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, How to Succeed at an Impossible Job. And that book is all about supporting people new to their role of diversity, equity, and inclusion and giving them some very practical tools to succeed in their work.
Oh, that's great. We'll talk about the book a little bit later on. But perhaps first, for somebody who is perhaps not so doesn't know so much about DEI, why is it so important and why are you so passionate about it?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think that DEI is just as important today as it has been yesterday and the day before, but it is definitely a popular topic of discussion lately. And I would say that Germany has, DEI has come to the forefront in Germany in the last few years, and it's really been a wake-up moment for many German companies, and perhaps not because those companies suddenly decided it was important, but often because employees, customers, and investors demanded it of those companies, asked them, where's your DEI strategy? What is the diversity like on your board, et cetera? So yeah, I mean, I think it's a popular topic because employees especially expect it to be a topic. And they're actively looking for companies that are inclusive and diverse. And I think that's why we've seen such a trend in the last few years. Yeah, and well, yes.
Yeah, yeah. At the end of the day, I mean, my podcast here deals a lot with employer branding, recruitment, but also retention. So to make it really clear, looking from that perspective and having the demographic change in mind, It's really a core topic to gain new employees, but also to keep the good employees in a company, right?
Yes, exactly.
I interrupted you. Sorry.
Yeah. So I was just going to talk about my personal passion and interest in this topic. So when I was in the U.S., I came from this data analytics background, and I was mostly working for tech companies. And I worked for a specific company that had very high hopes to do great work for society and use tech for good, let's say, but that didn't stop them from having internal processes and policies that were biased, exclusionary, discriminatory. So it really stuck with me that that disconnect between what their intentions are as a business, but then also how they treat their employees internally. So it became my interest to make the workplace better, and I want to see leaders throughout industries work, see DEI work as a priority and actually want the environment employees work in to be inclusive and safe. So I know that that's a lot to expect, but that keeps me very motivated.
Oh, I can really understand. So it's really, and if one listens to you, one realizes immediately it's really a hard topic for you. It really comes from the inside, and I guess otherwise you wouldn't have started to write a book about it. So that impressed me so much. So you already mentioned the book, and at least I understood. Perhaps it's wrong, but then you can correct me. It's also a book about your experience, but also it's meant for people who are also working in DEI. And so the title, Diversity, Equity and Inclusion, How to Succeed at an Impossible Job, already mentions this impossible job. So why is it impossible from your perspective?
Yeah, so, you know, maybe it's a bit of a sensational title, but the idea around it is that DEI work is very difficult. It's very challenging. And oftentimes that's because people in those roles aren't really given the support and the resources and the stakeholder commitment that's necessary to do good DEI work. I think that makes DEI work very hard. But what makes it impossible is that often we have very high expectations for the work. And others, our stakeholders, our employees, also have very high expectations of what we can achieve in our work. And there's typically a misalignment of those expectations. So we think that we can achieve more than we can in a corporate space, and employees have higher expectations than what's possible. And it really makes the job feel impossible, because even when we are doing good work, and even when we are launching great initiatives and driving a strong strategy, we're not really able to fulfill all those expectations. And at the end of the day, we still come home feeling quite disappointed. Mm. And I speak both from experience, but also from speaking to hundreds of people working in DEI in Europe. So I think that's what makes it impossible. But the idea behind my book is to give very practical tips and guidance to help people manage those expectations correctly and identify the parts of the job that you can succeed in and focus on that.
That's great. And that was also the feeling I had when you held your presentation. It was really like a recipe, perhaps, how to do it and what to avoid, but also what to have in mind and what to expect. So not to be too frustrated if things moving a little bit slower than expected. So obviously you have so many learnings to share. So what are the main learnings you would like to share if one wants to succeed, or if a company wants to succeed in a DEI?
Yeah, great question. So maybe let me set the scene. So you're a company, you're based in Germany, you're mid-size, maybe you're 5,000 employees, and you're just about to create your first DEI strategy. So for the first time, your company decided, look, we're going to put some resources and someone working full-time on this topic. So the first thing, my advice to that person, in that new DEI manager, the first thing they should do is find out who can be their executive champion. So who in the leadership team has the capacity and interest to be a champion for their work? And this might be difficult. I mentioned this when I gave my talk earlier this week, how to find that right person, how to make it clear to them what you expect of them, give them the tools to be a strong champion. But personally, I wouldn't start this journey without a champion in place.
I completely understand, but perhaps it's not so easy to find a champion. So do you have any ideas how to find out who might be the best champion for the topic?
Absolutely. So let me also say that many times the DEI person is not located on the senior executive team, right? Their peers are not other executive board members. So it becomes quite difficult. But the best thing you can do is really understand what the leadership structure is like at your company. How many levels of leadership are there? Who makes the decisions? Who's in charge of business strategy? And start building relationships with people. And the number one thing you can do is create a document with a list of expectations for your champion. And use that as a, you know, as a almost like a job description. So when you reach out to people, you can send that to them in advance and say, look, this is what I'm searching for. If this is something you're interested in, I'd love to talk to you about it. And it really sets expectations correctly from the beginning. So you don't have a champion who, you know, everyone loves to say yes. This always looks great on a CV, but you really want the person who accepts this responsibility to fully understand what they're getting into.
If I take a look at it from my position, not as a blogger or podcaster, but I'm also a CEO of a company, then I would always ask the question, why should I care? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of answers to it coming from a DEI perspective. But I guess the document should include expectations, but also give an answer, why should one care? So why does it really make sense to focus on this topic and what to do and then what to achieve?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's such an interesting and important part of the journey for a leader. And I have a blog post that's all about diversity, equity, and inclusion for startups. So even if you're just a small company, how should you think about DEI? And an important part of that blog is helping that CEO or helping that founder go on their own learning journey to figure out that DEI is important for the company, even if they're only, let's say, 10 or 15 people, because it needs to be a decision that they feel strongly about. If they're just doing it because they feel pressure or an obligation to do it, it won't go very far. So I can only recommend this blog post. Maybe we can put it in the show notes for this, because it really challenges leaders to come to the conclusion on their own that this is a topic they need to care about.
Yeah, super great. Great. Just send me the link. I'll include it in the show notes for sure. Of course, I will also include your book and any link you want to have there. So, but let's assume you're successful. You found an executive champion for the topic. What's next?
Great. So you've got your champion. The next thing is to set a strategy. And let me explain why. Why bother setting a strategy? I mean, likely, if you're in this DEI role, people are already sending you emails with ideas for initiatives. Maybe you already assume what focus areas you want to focus on. Well, a strategy is really important because it protects you. It essentially keeps your time focused on your main goal or outcome that you want to achieve. So instead of spreading your work too thin to have any impact, you have this North Star. You say, this is what we as an organization want to achieve, and here is how we're going to get there. So setting a strategy, I always suggest, is one of the first things to do, because it lets you take a moment, take all the feedback across your organization, take any work that's already been done, and then get the right people in the room. So the people who will actually be supporting your work and whose input is very valuable to you, and have all those people together come together and decide where you want to go. If you could imagine yourself 5 years from now, how is your company different because you have focused on DEI? And then once you've done that together, then you can work backwards and say, what initiatives do we need to put in place to make sure that we actually get to where we want to go? Mm-hmm.
This step you just mentioned probably is then really related to budget, stakeholders. So really make clear how much money do we need and what do we really want to do to achieve those goals set up in the strategy, right?
Exactly. So my typical advice is at the same time you bring the strategy to the executive team to get sign off, you also bring the budget request. Mm-hmm. And here's why. You know, everyone likes to sign off on a strategy. It costs them nothing, right? It costs nothing to put your name next to something and say, looks great, right? But to actually get the resources and prioritization and stakeholder involvement that you need to achieve the strategy is much more expensive. And when I say expensive, I'm not just talking about money. I'm talking about all the other background costs that it takes to actually implement a strategy. So if you bring those two things together at the same time, you're able to say, look, if you want me to deliver on the strategy, this is what I need in terms of money, time, prioritization, resources to actually do it.
So it's basically like really a project plan, right? Also with budget and everything included.
Exactly. Like I think you definitely need to have a good sense of what initiatives you want to work mm-hmm. on in order to achieve the strategy, because the budget will be really dependent on those initiatives, whether they're, let's say, more in-house, inexpensive initiatives, or whether they're, you know, working with external consultants or things like that. So yeah, I think it makes sense to have that relatively planned out at the moment you ask for budget, because otherwise it's easy to have quite a big ambition, but then actually not fully understand what it takes to deliver.
All right. So you got an executive champion, you set up a strategy, you lined out the right resourcing and support. Next step is really to find out if you're on the right way during the process to achieve the strategy or to implement the strategy.
Exactly. And this is a topic that's personally very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that have a data analytics background. I think about this a lot. And, you know, I have some blog posts specifically. So even if you don't buy the book, which is totally fine, I have some blog posts where I talk about the value of data in DEI work, and specifically how to run an employee inclusion and identity survey. So a D&I survey, essentially, because I see the value that this can bring, because you can essentially collect data about the current situation in your organization. So how diverse you are, how inclusive you are, and of course, most importantly, how inclusion varies by diversity or identity. And once you have this data and you're able to set a benchmark, then you can see whether the initiatives you're putting in place actually have an impact. And this is the most important thing, because, you know, what would be worse than working on DEI initiatives for 2-3 years and realizing that they haven't actually had an impact for your employees? So collecting data becomes really important, and specifically tying a KPI or metric to each initiative that you have in your strategy. So if this is a topic that you're interested in, please check out my blog, and I go into great detail about this in the book. I give really specific examples of what kind of KPIs and metrics you can tie to individual initiatives. So it's quite a clear roadmap if this is a challenge you're facing.
Yeah, well, there's another aspect to it. So I really would say I completely agree with what you're saying. And the other aspect from my perspective is you got to speak the language of the business, of the decision makers. And that's based on data, on figures and numbers. So you can always say, look here, we're getting better, but it's a stomach feeling. That's not enough. You really have to make sure that you have the right KPIs in place. And that's not only for this topic. That's basically for almost every topic, right?
Yeah, and you know, that brings up such an important point that I want to share with everyone. We as DEI professionals need to get better at bringing DEI into business decision making, because for so long, DEI was siloed in HR or maybe in corporate affairs or corporate governance. And it's so easy for the organization to dismiss DEI as, oh, that's the HR, the people topic. And when that happens, it becomes very difficult for DEI to actually become embedded in business decisions. So how does DEI impact the way that we're creating a service for our customers, or that we're, serving our, you know, publishing books, for example? Like, what is the DEI intersection there? Mm-hmm. And I think that by using data, by telling a convincing story, and then really getting DEI to be positioned at that high level among other strategic business decisions, I mean, this is where we can really embed DEI into a business.
Great. Makes sense, in my opinion. So the steps basically are 4 steps, also outlined in your book. Find the executive champion, set up a strategy, find the right resourcing and support, and finally, find out the right data to track your progress. Great. That's fairly simple, but I guess the power is in the details. So one should really read the book. By the way, can we give out a few of your books?
I would be very happy to do that.
Oh, super great. So what about 3 books? Would that be possible?
Sounds great.
Oh, great. So if one is interested to win a book by Sarah, just send me an email with the Betreff, I have to say it in German, sorry, but we'll have German listeners anyway. So write down a DEI, send it to me. Don't forget your postal address, and then Sarah will send out perhaps even signed books, right?
Yes, absolutely. I'll even include a little note in there for me.
Oh, super. That's great. Thanks a lot. But there's a last topic. And I was surprised during your speech that one of the topics you spoke about was also avoiding burnout. And as far as I understand, it's also part of the book. Why is that specific topic so important to you?
Yeah, so this is a good question. And, you know, DEI is such an interesting industry because people feel so passionate about DEI work. You know, often people idealize the work we're doing and really, really want to come into the DEI space because they think finally they'll be able to do that type of meaningful, you know, critical work that they think is so important. And I understand that. And I also feel that personal motivation. But you know, when we talk about DEI work as passion work, I think it becomes a little bit tricky because oftentimes when we're passionate about something, we tend to do that work, more than 40 hours per week. We tend to accept a lower salary for that. And I think it's important to remind ourselves that this work that we're doing, it's still a job, even if we are passionate about this work. And we do, this work should be rewarding. But personally, I think that the reward should be the salary and, hopefully, seeing our company and organization change. I mean, for me, that is rewarding. And I think that very complicated relationship we have with the work, you know, feeling very strongly, feeling passionate about this, but at the same time, still doing it as for a paid job can be really challenging to navigate. And the thing that I often say about this is to remind ourselves that we need to have the right level of emotional distance in the work that we do, and also set boundaries correctly. And what that means is, you know, being very realistic and honest with ourselves and our stakeholders about what do we have control over? What is the limitation of our role? What are out of bounds in terms of our strategy? And with all that, with clarity and all that, it becomes much easier to have the right frame of mind for the work. And then maybe one last tip or idea I'd share about this is to make sure that when we aren't working, we use that time to really refresh and give ourselves the space to think about something else, to work on a project unrelated to work, to work on, creative projects and outlets. So when we do come back to the office, when we do come back to work, we're really able to bring all of our energy and empathy and time.
Super. That has a lot to do with self-responsibility, I guess. And that's important for anyone, I would say, even if you're not working in DEI. It's a very important topic you stress here that goes, of course, hand in hand also with a topic as mentioned by you before. So great. To me, it was very inspiring that you included that in your book, but also in your talk and now in the podcast as well. So Sarah, thanks a lot that you took time for Saatkorn. I have a last question, and perhaps it's a personal question, because Saatkorn has a claim, when I say it in English, it would be like inspiration for a better working world. So is there anything that inspired you during the last weeks or so? Might be a personal experience, might be a job experience, anything you might want to share with the listeners?
Yeah. So the last few weeks, I actually spent some time outside of Berlin, and I was in Croatia and Greece. And it was actually very inspiring because I got a moment to get out of my comfort zone, get out of my normal routine, and meet new people and be in a different setting and see a different sunset, as they say. And it was really nice. And I think it was a good reminder to me that I need to make opportunities for myself to see things in a different perspective, and also challenge myself to get out of my routine. And that always gives me a little bit of energy and a boost, and helps me do a better job at work as well.
Well, Yeah, Sarah, thank you so much for this great talk we just had. So I wish you all the best. Keep your passion and all the best for the future work in DEI, and all the best for your book.
And maybe I'll just say that feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn, because I have a lot of talks coming up at different conferences related to DEI, and many of those conferences are virtual and free. So do check them out, and if you have the spare time and energy, definitely check out those events, because it's a great way to network with other people doing really cool work in DEI, and also to maybe reignite your interest and passion on this topic.
Great. All right, Sarah, thank you so much and all the best. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Jo, das war diese Saatkorn-Podcast-Episode. Wenn du nichts mehr verpassen willst und dich überhaupt für die Saatkorn-Themen interessierst, dann abonnier doch einfach meinen niegelnagelneuen Newsletter. Und dann bekommst du jeden Sonntag frisch alle Artikel, alle Podcast-Folgen, außerdem noch mal eine wöchentliche Kolumne und die Verlosung der Woche in deine Inbox. Musst du natürlich nicht sonntags lesen, geht auch montags oder dienstags. Ich würde mich sehr freuen, hier nochmal die URL saatkorn.com/newsletter. Tja, dann bis bald. Ciao.